I kind of think about the campaign sophistication often like A/B testing and optimization, where what I've noticed is that people often talk more about the more advanced cool testing, but you can move mountains with basic 50-50 split testing and truly have large impact, but it might not be as glamorous because it's potentially a bit less complex. And I think you see the same thing with activation through AAP, right? So fundamentals are fundamentals for a reason.
Hello, and welcome to the Funnel Podcast, a digital experience podcast by Blue Acorn ICI. Each month, we'll uncover new strategies and topics to improve digital experiences. I'm your host, Sarah G. I'm the Senior Content Marketing Manager here at Blue Acorn ICI. This is part four of our four-part series on Adobe Experience Platform across industries, and I'm bringing all three guests back for a roundtable episode. It's a fun one, so buckle up. Now, this is a great time if you haven't listened to the previous episodes in the series to pause and come back to this one after so you don't miss any of the insights they've already shared. You'll also notice this episode is a bit longer than our normal ones, and honestly, it could have been a lot longer because this group has a wealth of combined knowledge and we're all really excited to share their thoughts. We have three Blue Acorn ICI experts on today's episode: Liza Francis, Director of Analytics; Chase Brook, VP of Customer Intelligence; and Katie Klein, a principal consultant focused on data and insights. And we have a bunch of questions ranging from AI to activation. I hope you're as excited as I am. Let's go chat with them. Well, thank you all so much for joining me for the final episode of this four-part series. I think we've talked about a lot already related to everyone's industry expertise, so I'm excited to talk more about Adobe Experience Platform and just at a higher level get everyone's input on trends within different industries and where we're headed for the future. And since I have three of you on this call today, I'm just going to volley questions just a little bit to everybody. So no pressure, Chase. I'm going to start with you and kick off this episode with picking your brain on your experience across a variety of industries. What are some things you've noticed on how different businesses are using AEP? Are you seeing that they use it pretty similarly or differently, or what are you noticing?
Yeah, great question. Super happy to be here with the full crew. Thanks, Liza, Katie, Sarah, for us all coming together. It's fun to do podcasts one-on-one. It's a lot more fun to do it as a party. So again, thanks for setting this up, Sarah.
Yeah.
So yeah, I think I would kind of break that question into two general buckets, because I think there's one bucket which is a bit more compliance-based, where we're seeing AEP adoption a lot in healthcare and some in finance to essentially hit. For healthcare, it's to hit some HIPAA regulation needs. Essentially, data security is getting more and more intense, and AEP is a great place to store your data. So we're seeing a bit of a forced demand shift in some industries, especially healthcare. And then on the finance side, we're seeing a little bit of that as well, where again, data and security is paramount. So you need a tool that's essentially secure enough to trust with your millions of customers. And everybody, I think, knows the damage and the threat if you lose that trust. So on the sort of the financial sector side, we're seeing a similar move, which is, yeah, they're excited about capabilities. That really is the ROI positive influencer of Adobe Experience Platform. But in addition to that, they have just security and compliance needs that have to be met. So put those compliance and security needs on one bucket. And then the other bucket I would see, which I assume others see as well, is just the general desire to elevate marketing capabilities, to increase efficiencies, and to make more money, ROI positive money, get a, you know, receive more revenue than cost in these models across the board. And what I see it as, and I'd be curious the other folks' opinion, is kind of in a sentence, the evolution from a cookie to a customer. And that's really what I see happening. This is not a visitor anymore, which is a visitor is a cookie. This is Chase Brook, address, email, household, etc. But I'd love to hear the other folks' opinions on it.
Yeah, I saw Katie shaking her head when you were saying that.
Yeah, how much can I talk about moving to a people metric and what that means from an activation perspective? I could just go on and on. But I think just to, in the context of Chase, what you were saying. So, you know, if I think about retail as an example and the way that people are shopping, or we think about, you know, a number of other industries that are maybe slightly less regulated in the, context of AEP, a little bit separate from healthcare. Even there, the demand to be able to understand who someone is and what they want you to help with, I think is deeply tied to the identity of who that person is, right? So, the discussion around things like personas and then how that actually translates to the capabilities, and ties into an email and ties into a name and some of that PII, and then how that translates to, regulatory standards, again, even outside of more regulated industries, I think is definitely something that I hear about almost on a daily basis at this point, right? If I go in store and I shop, and then I'm also online and I'm browsing, and then I end up ultimately converting on a different day online, what does that really mean for me as a customer? And then how can my journey be more effectively supported by both the brand that I'm shopping with as well as the technology?
Great point. Liza, do you have anything else to add?
Yeah, so going to that people metric piece, I've noticed some of my recent experience has been with a lot of telecom, and with telecom, especially like on the internet side, it's not a commodity yet, but it is in a lot of locations. It is because sometimes you only have one provider as an option. Like if you want fiber, if you want landline internet, you only have one choice. So these clients that I've been working with, in terms of the people side, is that it's all first person data. Like they know who these people are. They have a ton of data already on them. So it's more about cross sell, upsell, suppression, or some, those are like the major use cases, because they already have, that's not as many anonymous or pseudonymous folks. It's, they already know who these people are. It's more about those more detailed marketing tactics to get them to buy more or to upgrade to the HBO Max channel, just kind of adding on to what they already have, which is really interesting.
Any other thoughts?
Just want to let Liza know that I spent a long time trying to figure out how to spell synonymous, and I've still failed.
Synonymous, pseudonymous, and anonymous.
Oof.
And I probably don't
Rip.
pronounce it correctly
No,
either.
I think you're fine.
I was trying to live in between unknown and known recently on some work, and I really struggled to define that. And it was as I was kind of trying to wrap my mind around the ECID and how that compares to the FIPID, the first person ID, which, and I'd be curious, maybe I'm getting too technical, but I always thought the first person ID, at least in some of these contexts, was that I created an account. So I've essentially raised my hand and said, yes, I'm a first person ID. You can use this. But I learned a bit more recently in different instances. This is in the financial space, that say I wanted to get like a loan rate calculator, or I wanted to put in information, but I'm not actually creating an account, but I gave you an email. So it's kind of like a soft first person ID, pre-account, pre-authentication. And that's where I was trying to play with pseudonymous and got real lost on the spelling.
Or it could be the company itself assigned you
Right.
a number or an alphanumeric code right when you started visiting,
Yeah.
and it follows you all the way through at a first party level, and it's not an ECID, it's not third party, and it's something that they own themselves.
Adobe owns the ECID, the company owns the first person ID. And I was learning about those differences and sort of the controls, powers that you get by essentially who owns the cookie, all
I
on the
think
path, right? Because we're talking about AEP to the person.
there's so much interesting complexity about this, and I'll try not to go too far down the rabbit hole when I start to think of like, what does this mean for like a GCLID, right? Like a Google
Yeah.
cookie and campaign level. But what I will say is one of the interesting examples that I've seen as we've moved from more device-based identity resolution into this first person, based concept is, if I add something to cart, I'll just go back to the retail space because I see this so frequently. But I add something to cart, but I haven't logged in. And so my ECID exists, but at a company level, there's likely another identifier that's assigned to that person, right? And so once they authenticate, what does that mean to be able to tie those things together? And then just tying it into functionality in particular, like the idea of graph-based stitching. becoming available in customer journey analytics and what that meant for field-based stitching previously and utilizing Data Distiller, like all of these things are considerations for how we think about this at a measurement and insights perspective. But it's still kind of materially separate from how we think about it from a marketing activation perspective. And I think there is this very strong desire across a lot of the conversations that I have to start tying that together in a meaningful way. And I think it is complex, but it is deeply interesting. A lot of it can be tied into data science concepts. And so there's just still a lot of opportunity to, on my end, to continue to better understand this space and figure out ways that we can utilize the data in the most meaningful way.
Just to kind of piggyback on that, Katie, which was interesting, going back to Sarah's original question about, what are some industries doing differently? What are they doing the same? I've noticed that in AP, like in the data lake, there are so many data variables that aren't even being used, because so they go through a use case, they say we need all of these data variables, but then when it comes down to it, they don't really use even all of them. So there's so much. There might be identifiers like the card ID that's in there, but they're not even necessarily using it. They might not even be using it for the graphs, like to stitch, but it's in there, it's just sitting in there. So I found like whether it's identities or just data variables in general that I'm like, wow, they have a lot in there that we're not even using for any marketing purpose at this time. So it's just a matter of like, wow, there's so much in there not even being utilized, without even bringing any more data sources in.
And I like to, I think it's so interesting because you can visualize it almost as like I was reading about, it's a cluster. I'm a person, but I'm going to have a cluster of like satellites around me that represent different transient and durable identifiers. And I think that's what AAP does very well, is it essentially it understands the one to many relationship between a heartbeat and all the little bits I'm leaving behind. And AAP is identity. That's what I've kind of started getting more and more verbose about, because that's where programs go right and that's where programs go wrong. And it's really just about the quest of the right identifiers to cluster together around the notion of a person.
Couldn't have said it better myself, but lots of insights there. And I feel like each question I ask is somewhat a loaded question of like we can go down a rabbit hole of more and more and more. So I kind of want to move on to AI because everyone's talking about AI, and I am sure it's on everyone's mind of how can we start using more AI and just day-to-day activities. So maybe I'll start with Liza this go around. What are some ways that businesses can just start using AI with AEP or things that you've noticed?
So I'm going to quote Katie here that like AI has been like infused into Adobe Experience Platform like from the beginning. I think she said that. I don't know, in her last podcast. But it's so true. Like I've noticed recently I was ingesting some data, a new data source into AP, and there's a feature, an AI-based feature of AP on the UI side that when you bring data in, it just automatically starts mapping it for you. Like it pre-maps it for you. Obviously, you still need an experienced data engineer, operator, or architect to look at all of those mappings and make sure they're correct. But it does a lot of the hard work for you, especially when you have hundreds and hundreds of variables coming in. It's very helpful. So something like that, it's just that schema mapping in the XDM feature. Obviously, it can go wrong and it could make a mistake, but it saves you a lot of time. And something that you would have to do that manually, if you had to do it manually, it could take hours or days. And in this instance, it maps it all, and you just have to check it and maybe make some tweaks, and then you're good to go. So that's like one feature that I've been pleasantly surprised with, just as a time saver. So that's kind of like a passive tool, right? Like that's something that's just baked into AP that you don't, it's not like something you turn on or actively, it's just there, right? It's built in. And AP has some other more active tools that you would have to, purposely engage with. So for example, there's a propensity scoring tool in the intelligence side that you have to set up, and there's a lot of like parameters around it of how it works, but to be able to do churn prediction and propensity scoring around different consumer actions, those tools could be used. Once you start having data coming in and you have quality data, you can use those within AEP. as well. So it's kind of like the active and I kind of put it into two groups, like passive and active. So passive are just features that AP has and it provides to you, and you don't even, sometimes you might not even realize you're using them. And then the more active ones where you actually have to go and agree, you got to agree to their AI terms and policies and things like that. But that has a lot of more features for sure.
Any other thoughts? We could talk more about just AI adoption as a whole or things businesses need to do to prepare if not.
I have so many thoughts about AI. First of all, I'll say thank you, Liza, for accurately representing my sentiment there. I appreciate it. And for stating it, I think, better than I did, actually. So thanks for that. So I will preface this by saying I don't want to overlook the idea that discussions around AI can be a little bit controversial, right? And rightfully so. Anytime you're thinking about inputting data into a model, you want to be doing so in a meaningful way. But I think the idea that the capabilities are infused into the Adobe solutions makes that, data ecosystem and the data layer that AI needs to access, a little bit, it gives a little bit more peace of mind from my perspective. And this is part of what, I've talked to folks who are in some of those more regulated industries about is, how do you need to think about this from an approvals perspective, right? I'm certainly not on the legal or regulatory side, so let me just also preface it by saying that. But I think the place where I tend to start with this is even before some of the capabilities, really thinking about like how are we treating the data in the most kind of ethical way, right? Is like how do we want to be able to find some efficiencies, be able to leverage capabilities that really just, Liza, like you said, it builds on things that have existed there before, right? So from a scoring perspective, from a modeling perspective, these are things that folks have been using Adobe Solutions, have been using some aspect of likely for years, thinking about attribution and stuff like that, right? At this stage, with incorporating Gen AI and agentic AI and what that means from a content perspective and how we think about that for measurement and activation, I just think it's such an interesting opportunity for us to look at our data quality, look at the structure of the data, look at the governance and the operating model. And then to say, and now we can use all these cool features to be able to do stuff that we haven't been able to do for the last X amount of years, right? So, I just will reinforce the idea that I think even before you start using these things, which it's great that so much of this is baked in. And small spoiler alert, I have a conversation coming up at Summit actually in April to talk about some of these related features, which I'm super excited about. But it's the idea that if these things are accessible within solutions that you're already leveraging, how do you just start implementing them as a way to augment and save time and treat it more like a coworker that you're partnering with without replacing a role in its entirety? Because I'm not seeing that personally in the workflows that I'm working through. But before that even starts, you want to make sure that the data is as usable as you need it to be, right? Like it needs to be fit for purpose to be able to use these things. And so if I want to look at something that is across a vast time period for data, that is something that AI has a great purpose for. I want to look at forecast, I want to look at plan, I want to look at actuals, I want to be able to model off of that to be able to determine how it's going to impact performance, what an investment needs to look like. These are all ways to use something that adds a sort of automation in there to save time. But you want to make sure that the data that you're looking at is trustworthy. You want to make sure that you're working with folks who can really help you to implement that in a meaningful way. And it's great because I've seen that work really well in a lot of the projects that we've started working on that are a bit more AI centric, but I will say human focused.
Chase, anything else to add?
It's so loaded, but I agree to 100% with Liza and Katie. And I think like to Katie's point on data structure, that's usually where I kind of start and end the conversation often because I look at this a little bit like a little philosophically, but like simple systems can create incredibly complex outputs, right? Like you start incredibly simple, like think about an economy, two variables, supply and demand, and that's think about the complexity in the world of economics from that very basic principle. I think AI could be seen somewhat similarly. And if you want to start on the left axis and simple systems, it's just the data structure. It's just trying to keep it simple, hygienic, and controlled. And then that's your springboard for AI support, complexity, the build from that. And there's still so much emerging and so much unknown. I usually just try and stay at that left side of the spectrum, focused on simple structured data. I also think there's a bit of a, you don't want to dump everything into AEP. AEP is not necessarily your low cost cloud-based storage device. And so I think there's intention that has to come into how much data do you want AI to churn on, and does that belong in AEP? That's maybe more modeling. That might be more on the modeling side, but what I'm bumping into a lot is that balance of how much volume goes in.
Yeah, these are great points. Just building on that a little bit too is thinking about the volume of data and then also thinking about the prompts that you're utilizing, right? Like the idea of using natural language to be able to extract whatever it is that you're extracting from the data. You can't just go in a lot of instances, and as folks are using LLMs, they're probably seeing this in some cases. You put something in that feels relatively simple, and you're not necessarily getting exactly the output that you might anticipate. And so again, within the AEP ecosystem, right? And also just to clarify, so there are things working behind the scenes, but when we're thinking about agentic AI, the agents that operate individually are kind of building off of that same foundation, right? But you are trying to do this in meaningful contextualized aspects, right? Or components, we can call it buckets. So if I ask an agent to give me a certain subset of data and to say, I don't know, show me all of the customers who, or all of the accounts that were inactive over the last 6 months and compare that year over year for the last 3 years and then identify trends that would feed into personas. And I'm really just making this up on the fly, right? If you don't have that categorized in a way that's going to help serve that, and you're not asking with the level of detail that you need, you may not get the output that you want. And so, again, going back to governance, but also just even thinking about that data structure, you want to be able to pair these things together in a meaningful way. I think a really good way to do that is a test and learn mentality. You put a subset of your data in, or you categorize it in a way that's going to give access to, the model that you need to utilize, and you see what it gives you. And then you determine what is your calculated risk of sorts in being able to rely on this. And then is there anything you need to do to enhance your setup? So there's a lot of great efficiencies to be able to use these things that are embedded. I think building it out at a program level and really thinking about what this means organizationally, and then how are you enabling folks through things like prompts and data structure and documentation, all of those very like unsexy things to talk about, but that are really, really important, I think is just a really critical part of the AI discussion, especially around insights, data activation.
Well, you need the unsexy things to make the sexy things cool.
Very true. The gears are not the things that you're showing, in front of the folks who want to look at the cool looking stuff, but it still has to help it run, right?
Right. And you were touching on just AI agents. Does anyone have any thoughts on using Adobe AI agents versus like non-Adobe AI and how that plays a role into personalized experiences?
Yes.
Lots of thoughts.
Lots and lots of thoughts. I think we are at a very interesting inflection point when it comes to how people are being sent to various destinations. I would imagine that many companies, as they are looking at their data, are thinking about why am I seeing traffic, spike or dip or just change from ways that we've seen it in the past. And I think LLMs are playing a role there, right? How many times are people going to ChatGPT or Copilot or Gemini or one of these other non-Adobe specific, places where they can add in prompts, and then going to a retailer or going to, a banking site or going to an airline site, any of these things, telecom, and thinking about how are you researching potential plans that you might want. That's not necessarily going to convert in the same way. And having a depth of understanding of that and then thinking about what that means for maybe LLMs as a channel in the future and what that means for monetization, I think is a very interesting conversation. I think they're complementary though. I think, there's a difference between building something non-Adobe related, thinking about things that already exist that are non-Adobe related, that are external to the AEP ecosystem. I don't think one begets another, in my perspective, because when you have capabilities that are embedded into the solutions that you're already using, I think to use that solution to its fullest extent, you should be using that as well. So, how am I using CJA or AEM to be able to optimize content and then understanding the performance of that and the AI capabilities within Adobe? And the things that are non-Adobe that precede that, right? That's my perspective on
Yeah, it's so loaded. I
it.
agree, and I think kind of almost question mark UTM underscore ChatGPT, right? Like this is essentially a new channel has entered the realm. That channel is likely cannibalizing organic or direct traffic. So I think it's interesting. Is it incremental or not? I doubt it's incremental, but it's new. It's a new route, and I think that's the big play here is. How do you, just like the dawn of SEO, the dawn of Google, how do you cater to the new channel? And what I think is so interesting, and Katie Liza, you might have perspective on this too, as it relates to like the semantic data layer, is in my mind, the user experience and the glass of the front end website experience is becoming less and less relevant. And really, what the brand is providing is information. Information about who they are, what they sell, and why you should buy it. And those bits really are now the value that any LLM or any other tool is going to convert into a UI or a user experience for Chase. I don't need to go to Burton.com. I'm going to search snowboards, and ChatGPT will provide me the glass that I want, sourcing the information from Burton. And so I think that could be quite downstream, but I think there's just going to be a paradigm shift, and it all comes back to essentially bits of information that have to be structured, they have to be accurate, they have to be relevant. And then there's all these systems that are going to should take those bits and cater them to me, the universe of the observer, which is like new. That's very new, powered by the LLMs, all outside of Adobe. Potentially, the data layer stuff could be, and I'd be curious, Katie, if you have perspective on what some of your work with Adobe and the semantic data layer, because to me, that's the frontier. It is the layer, the abstraction layer of information that LLMs will consume to answer my questions.
I agree wholeheartedly. I think it's two kind of offshoots of that. I think there is, you mentioned SEO, right? So, what is the data that I have on my own properties that are going to raise visibility for my brand, right? If I'm on the brand side. And then, how is that going to feed into prioritization and visibility within these non-Adobe branded but not brand property experiences, right? And this, there is the semantic layer too, right? I mean, context is king. So, you have to have data that is contextualized so that the AI can go in and actually understand that. So it's the prompt, but it's also the connection to not just the data structure, but how is that data enriched? What is the type of data? What's the source? Are you, pulling that from all of your own properties and optimizing it? Or are you actually pulling it from a variety of places? So a couple of different considerations for that. But I think you're right. If you kind of start at this data layer concept and move on from there, it can be really complex, but it's breaking it down into digestible pieces, I think, can make it feel less overwhelming. And then, I'll just say also, this reminds me of kind of when social media really picked up in terms of becoming a marketing channel, right? And this is obviously quite a while ago, but if I think about how we were looking at data coming from apps, social apps, And maybe not being able to identify that right off the bat, but those things driving conversions and trying to kind of navigate what does that look like. And then once that picked up, thinking about what shopping experiences or something associated with that looked like off property, right? Like social shopping. What does it look like when you go to TikTok and you buy something there? What does that look like for your data? What does that look like for, you know, how you're attributing your conversions? All of these things are considerations, right? So if you're making purchases, you're finding products, or you're doing these things, you're not going to use a product finding method on your own property. You're going to look at that in a different way. And it's just a matter, I think, of reshaping what insights look like at that level, leveraging AI to be able to help support that, but also to support the customer experience. So, you know, I think it's a reimagining of what some of these marketing plans look like, what some of the measurement plans look like, and really distilling that down into how to utilize a data layer and how to utilize the technology to be able to best support a very, I agree, new space going forward. I don't think we've seen something that really is exactly like this. We've seen echoes of this across different things like, you know, the boom of social and things like that, but I don't think we've seen the same thing. It'll be very interesting to see how it progresses over the next couple of years.
Yeah, I think AI has exacerbated existing underlying issues too, like
That's
on the
true.
World Wide Web. Recently, I had I was just testing out different browsers that have like AI infused, like Comet and a few of the others. And you know, it can make the user experience better because you know they have it knows your next action. It'll recommend things, which is very nice, but at the same time, it can lead you down a path where, you know, kind of gets your hopes up. Like I had, it was helping me shop and it said, oh, and we found that there's some coupons. We have some coupons, you know, for this product. And of course, none of the coupons worked because the AI was leveraging, you know, websites or things that were definitely outdated or, you know, didn't have correct dates on them or whatever. So it can really lead to a poor user experience as well, if that underlying data is not good or accurate or current. But I think that's going to get better. It's just, you know, the kind of the term AI slop is kind of floating around everywhere, not just with content, but AI slop can be, you know, old landing pages or old things that AI is referencing that it shouldn't anymore. So it's definitely going to highlight companies and brands that do a good job of, you know, keeping up to date with everything in their stratosphere, like from their web pages, from their apps to everything they offer. Like Chase was mentioning, you know, having like that Burton brand, the snowboarding, that if you're selling snowboards, you know, you've got to have the most recent content, the most recent things all there so that AI is able to provide that for you, those recommendations.
I think you guys have shared a lot of great insights on AI and where we're headed and important things to keep in mind. Let's switch a little bit to activation. Really interested to hear everyone's perspective on impressive marketing activations you've seen enabled through AEP. Liza, do you want to kick us off with just what you've seen?
So one recently that I saw that and it was impressive because it did not rely on any third mark and third party you know cookies. It didn't rely on any third party vendors that you have to pay to do something extra for you. So one recently, basically, you know, across device, seeing that somebody searched something on their phone, on their mobile device, and then being able to, within the CDP of AEP, being able to, you know, create an audience for that group, a personalized audience, and then being able to send that to a TV advertiser so we know exactly what they were doing. And this is not even using AJO or anything. It's just literally segmentation, but not, it's all first party data. It's first party collected by the company and then shared with an ad agency directly and not needing a vendor or some third party tool to be able to activate that. I know it sounds simple, but in the past, you had to rely on a lot of third party vendors and a lot of third party data to make that happen. And with the CDP, you don't have that reliance anymore. And so that's something I'm starting to see. And it's impressive to me because it is a money saver. You're not having to pay a third party vendor to provide that connection, and you're able to do it in-house and do it yourself. So that's one that I thought was cool recently that was done. Does anybody else have another example?
I can give you two that kind of come to mind for me. And I think, with it being January, I will think about kind of the listening behavior and the watching behavior and the way that, brands talk about what you've done over the course of the year prior, right? And, I think it's really interesting how tracking that behavior and thinking about that cross-device and thinking about that at an individual level, at a household level, and what that means from an identity perspective is especially interesting. It's not just, a user on a phone, kind of going back to that visitor concept that Chase, you were talking about at the beginning, right? This is really about what happens when I log into a streaming service and I think about the things that I've watched over the course of a year that I may want to revisit. What that means from a recommendations and a next best action perspective. And I see this happen across the board, across a number of different services, right? If I'm listening to audiobooks or I'm listening to a playlist, thinking about who new artists are, new authors, or new production, and what that looks like for shaping the content that I am choosing to engage with over the coming year. Does that look any different? So, the idea that that set of capabilities exists within AEP and can be used at a not just a campaign level, but really an overarching personalization level based on my behavior, based on trends, I think is a really cool way to use it. And then just building on that too, like I think when retargeting and things like cart abandonment use cases feel elegant to a user, that it is the best possible way of using the technology, right? Like we can go back
Absolutely.
Yeah.
to the days of, I bought a pair of shoes and I still see an ad for it. Or I leave something in a cart and then I see four banners, right? And it's like that doesn't always feel cohesive. And fortunately, I don't see that as frequently these days because there's increased capabilities that can change that experience. But when I look at something and then things are just lightly personalized and, I'm being spoken to as a person or an individual or within a broader persona, and it's something that goes, oh, okay, you know what? Yeah, I did buy a sweater or a pair of shoes like that that I liked last year, and maybe it's within a color family, and so there are similar things that are being shown, or maybe it's associated with a particular activity. Chase, I think you brought up Burton, and so I think about snowboarding, right? And so it's like if there are things in that realm of sports or activities, or there are ways that I am, being shown, products for a family, right? That might be relevant at different times of the year when that feels elegant. And the campaigns are really just encouraging me to continue to engage with the brand, build trust, and then go on to make a purchase that is something that is a good investment for me and for my family. I think it's the best possible use of the technology.
Of another marketing activation recently that I thought was kind of not new, but preference centers are becoming more important. And so now a company doesn't just have your email, they have your email, they have your text, they have maybe multiple emails for your whole household. And in the past, when you opted out of an email from a brand, it was like you're dead in the water. The brand's like, they're dead in the water. That's it. They opted out. They unsubscribed. We're done. And with real-time CDP, when somebody opts out for whatever reason, maybe they're just sick of getting emails. They get 1,000 emails a day, or maybe they don't use that email anymore. Maybe that email is an old email that they don't, or they only use it for certain purposes. So they've opted out or they're unsubscribed. That doesn't mean you're dead in the water anymore. Now with, true omni-channel capabilities, you can, with smart, intelligent decision making, you could, okay, this person is still a customer. They're still interested in these things. Just because they opted out of a single unsubscribe from one email that they have doesn't mean you're done. You can reroute and target those customers a different way. if you've noticed, with the propensity that, hey, when we send them a text, they're more likely to purchase. So it's okay that they opted out of that email. They are more of a text customer. And, rerouting those marketing messages to a different channel that speaks to that customer or to that user is really important because, we kind of change how we communicate over time. Like TikTok and all those different channels didn't exist 10 years ago, but now that's like maybe a more preferred channel to purchase or to shop versus going to the website. So things like that is just very interesting to me about how be able to opt out. If you opt out now with the CDP and with Preference Center data, you can reroute it to a different channel that can kind of morph with the customer and just meet them where they are.
Totally. Chase, any thoughts? Any cool things you've seen?
Yeah, I'm kind of in the court with Katie on almost elegant simplicity winning the day still. I kind of think about the campaign sophistication often like A/B testing and optimization, where what I've noticed is that people often talk more about the more advanced cool testing, but you can move mountains with basic 50-50 split testing and truly have large impact, but it might not be as glamorous because it's potentially a bit less complex. And I think you see the same thing with activation through AEP, right? So fundamentals are fundamentals for a reason. Get first name, last name right first, then move on to address, household, children. Get basic card abandonment right first, and then increment a smart product slider based on my previous purchase patterns. And so I think a lot has to do with just smart sequential, essentially use case evolution and getting each step locked in, correct, and effective before moving to the next step. And that's how, as a business, you're really going to get full potential because you're going up the pyramid from simple to complex. And at each level, you're getting a ton of like a yield, including at the basic level of basic personalization. So to me, it's really about that spectrum. And then what I see, coming at the coolest, it's usually from retail. It's actually just elegant and useful, lightly personalized to the person, but maybe heavily personalized to my product propensity. Generally email, but sometimes email and SMS campaigns. I think those are the most cool and the most effective. And then just a final note, especially on SMS, it is a kind of amazing, but also a given that if I get a text from Verizon and I say yes, Verizon's going to respond to that. There's two way communications in this activation, which is another layer of engagement, right? It's not just outbound to Chase and I hope he shows up on my website with third party add-ons like Cinch and other things within SMS orchestrated through AJO. It becomes a dialogue, which is uniquely powerful because now it's essentially gone from a one-way street to a two-way street. And the conversion is going to be, in line with that in terms of just a more compelling experience.
Yeah, nothing's worse when you respond and then they say, "This is not monitored."
Yeah, it's like, what are you doing?
Like,
It's
I
like,
had an email recently and I was like, I thought that they would like, I thought it was like for customer service. And then they were like, oh, this email is not being monitored. Or this text isn't being monitored. We're not going to
yeah,
reply to you. I'm like, oh, missed opportunity.
Well,
yeah.
that's the thing, right? It's like I feel like
Yeah.
we keep talking about all the operational stuff and there's like exciting, flashy stuff to talk about. But at the end of the day, like using the data to have the right conversation, and that, is preferences, that is explaining how data is used, and that it is an exchange of services and value when you are looking to have something personalized or not personalized, or you're looking to give over your information and your preferences or not, opting into things. But those opportunities to say, hey, there's a challenge with some sort of service, or listen, we're not going to respond to you in this way, or the SLA to get back to you is X. Like managing those expectations is, I think, as important as being able to do things in a promotional way. So that's really where I see trust being fostered and then campaigns feel even more resonant in a lot of ways, right? I want to have a relationship with a provider of some sort, whatever industry that's within, who understands that I need a certain level of communication to understand what the value is that I am being provided, that I am comfortable with the level of detail that I have around the type of technology and data that's being utilized. But then I am also being communicated that I have great value and promotional opportunities by engaging with them in that way, right? I've been a long-standing loyalty customer of a number of different brands and companies. There's, ways to be able to utilize these conversations through marketing, but also through systems and operations that just work hand in hand. And I think bringing it back to something like AEP, having things centralized in a way that serves insights, identity, activation, orchestration, all of these things in a way that is really functional within that ecosystem, that there's so much value in that to be able to use that in a meaningful way to just continue to build trust with consumers, whatever industry you're in, right? This can be healthcare, this can be manufacturing, this can be telco, this can be, really anyway, retail, media, entertainment. It can transcend all of that. And I think that is the way that we build trust. That's the way that we facilitate continuity, and I think a lot of that is really just founded on the data and the capabilities and the communication.
I know we've touched on literally everything. I think each and every one of you have dropped so much knowledge, not only in the individual episodes, but in this episode as well. And I just want to thank all of you for taking the time to speak with me about Adobe Experience Platform. Thank you. Thank you for the knowledge, the insights.
These are the best
Thanks for having us.
conversations. Yeah, thank you for making this happen. It's great.
Well, looking forward to more learnings from each of you in the future. And thanks so much.
If you've enjoyed this episode of The Funnel and all the insights we've shared, share it with your friends. And if you like this series, reach out and let me know because I plan on doing more series content like this in the future. To learn more about Katie, Chase, and Liza, check out the links in our show notes for more information. And with that, until next time.